This audio program is brought to you courtesy of Audible.com. Audible, audio that speaks to you wherever you are.
I have always wanted to set down an account of the first time I worked with my esteemed friend, Hercule Poirot. And now I think the time has come at last to do it.
We present John Moffat as Hercule Poirot and Simon Williams as Captain Hastings in Agatha Christie's The Mysterious Affair at Stiles.
It was the summer of 1916. I had been invalided home from the front, and after spending weeks in a rather depressing convalescent hospital, I was given a month's sick leave. But having no near relations in England, I was rather at a loss what to do with myself.
Why don't you come and spend your sick leave with us? We'd love to have you.
And then, quite by chance, I ran across John Cavendish. I hadn't seen him for ages, and he insisted on taking me off to his club in Pall Mall.
It must be years since you last stayed at Stiles. The mater will be delighted to see you. I suppose you heard that she married again?
I certainly had not. Years ago, John's father had taken a second wife. He was a widower with two sons. Emily Cavendish was a handsome woman in her 40s, and she had immediately taken charge of everything. So much so that when John's father died, he had left Stiles Court to her for her lifetime, as well as the greater part of his fortune.
Mary and I are living there at the moment. Oh, you haven't met my wife, I think.
No, I haven't had the pleasure.
And Lawrence is there as well, of course. You remember my brother?
Yes. Wasn't he going to be a doctor or something of the sort?
Oh, yes, and he qualified all right, but his heart really wasn't in it. So now he just whiles away the time writing his verses, though he can never get anyone to publish them. Doesn't earn a penny, of course.
And your mother's new husband?
Alfred Inglethorpe is an ingratiating little weasel, not to put too fine a point on it. And his being at Stiles is making life very difficult for all of us.
How did she come to meet him?
Through Evie. Well, she was after your time, I think.
Yes, she must have been.
Evelyn Howard. She's the mater's companion and general factotum. Not exactly young and beautiful, but as game as they come. Well, this man Inglethorpe...
Your mother's new husband.
He turned up out of nowhere on the pretense of being a second cousin of Evie's, although she didn't seem to be particularly keen to acknowledge the relationship. The fellow's an absolute outsider. Well, you only have to look at him to see that. Uriah Heep in a bushy black beard.
Most unappetizing.
Well, the mater took him on as her secretary. You know, she's always running hundreds of societies, and of course it's got much worse with the war. And no doubt this fellow was quite useful to her. But you could have knocked us all down with a feather when, 3 months ago, she announced that the two of them were going to be married.
How old is this chap?
Oh, he's at least 20 years younger than the mater. And he's beginning to have the most abominable influence over her. She can't make a decision without him. But you'll be able to see for yourself when you come down.
Life at Stiles Court did not sound exactly promising, but John had always been rather prone to look on the gloomy side of things. He met me at the absurd little station at Stiles St. Mary and drove us through the quiet Essex lanes. It seemed almost impossible to believe that, not all that far away, a great war was being fought.
I'm afraid you'll find it pretty quiet down here.
Oh, but my dear fellow, that's exactly what I want.
Oh, it's pleasant enough if you're content to lead the idle life. Have you got the time on you?
Just after 5.
Oh, too late to pick up Cynthia then. She'd have left the hospital by now.
Cynthia? That's not your wife?
No, Cynthia's a protégé of the mater's, the daughter of a school friend of hers. She married a rascally solicitor who came a cropper. He killed himself, his wife died, and the poor girl was left an orphan and penniless. The mater came to the rescue, and she's been living with us ever since, nearly 2 years now. She works at the dispensary in the hospital in Tadminster.
We turned off through the lodge gates of Stiles Court and drove up the long drive. As we stopped in front of the house, a lady in a sturdy tweed skirt straightened up from the flower bed.
Back from the station already?
I've collected our wounded hero, Evie. This is my old friend Hastings.
Welcome to Stiles Court, Captain.
Thank you, Miss Howard. The garden's keeping you busy, I see.
Weeds grow like a house on fire. You'd better watch your step or I'll get you working on them too.
I'm sure I'll be only too delighted to make myself useful.
Don't say it. Soon wish you hadn't.
Where's tea, inside or out?
Out. Too fine a day to be cooped up in the house.
Come on then, Evie, and be refreshed. The labourer is worthy of his hire, you know.
Tea was spread out under the shade of a great sycamore. Lawrence was stretched on the grass, reading.
You remember my brother, of course.
Very well. Good to see you, Lawrence.
And you. All things considered, you're looking remarkably well.
And this is my wife, Mary.
How do you do, Captain Hastings? Sit yourself down. That chair's probably the most comfortable.
I shall never forget my first sight of Mary Cavendish. The vivid sense of slumbering fire that seemed to find expression only in those wonderful tawny eyes of hers.
You must be glad to be out of your convalescent home at last. Dreadfully depressing places, I've always thought.
Oh, I don't know. One learns to make the best of things, and a sense of humour helps a good deal.
Then you will write to the princess, won't you, Alfred? She should be at Windsor, I think.
Here comes the mater.
There's no mistaking that voice, is there? As long as I've known her, she's been trying to persuade someone to open something or other.
I'll drop a line to Lady Tadminster for the second day. Or should we wait until we hear from the princess?
My dear, do you think it might be better to delay writing to her ladyship? If the princess declines, she would be a perfectly suitable person to open the fate.
And that's Inglethorpe. You see what I mean about that preposterous beard?
How right you always are, Alfred. Ah, but here is Captain Hastings. How delightful to see you at Stiles again after all these years. Alfred, darling, this is Captain Hastings.
A pleasure to make your acquaintance. Is soldiering your regular profession, Captain?
No, before the war I was at Lloyd's.
And you will return there when the war is over?
Perhaps. I might well make a fresh start altogether.
And what would you choose if you could do exactly as you wished?
Well, that depends.
What would you really like to do, Captain Hastings?
Well, to tell the truth, I've always had a secret hankering to be a detective.
Be better than Lloyd's, at any rate.
But what kind, Captain? A chief inspector or a Sherlock Holmes?
Oh, Sherlock Holmes every time.
And have you had any experience of detective work?
Well, I can't say I have, but I came across a chap in Belgium before the war, a very fine detective, and he said it all depended on method.
Don't mind a good detective story now and then. But it's all a load of rubbish, really. Keep you waiting to the last chapter for the criminal to be unmasked. In real life, you'd know at once.
You mean that if you were involved in a crime, Evie, you'd know the murderer straight away?
Of course I would. I'd feel it in my fingertips the moment he came near me.
It might be a she.
Might be, but murder's more of a man's business.
Not in a case of poisoning. Isn't that supposed to be the woman's weapon? Dr. Bauerstein, who knows all about these things, says there are probably dozens of murders that go unsuspected because the medical profession knows next to nothing about uncommon poisons.
Oh, what a very gruesome conversation. I feel as if a goose were walking over my grave. Ah, but here's Cynthia. You're very late today, my dear.
I'm sorry. There was a last-minute rush at the dispensary.
Cynthia Murdoch looked delightfully fresh in her VAD uniform. She sat down on the grass by my chair and I handed her the plate of sandwiches.
Why don't you come and sit here beside me? It's so much nicer.
What a very good idea. You work in the dispensary at Tadminster, I gather, Miss Murdoch.
For my sins.
And how many people have you poisoned?
Oh, simply hundreds.
When you've finished your tea, Cynthia, could you come and write a few notes for me?
Of course, Aunt Emily. I'll come straight away.
And perhaps we might have a little chat, Captain Hastings, before dinner. I'd love to hear your views about the war. I shall be in my boudoir.
Of course, Mrs. Inglethorpe. I'll be delighted.
My bedroom was in the left wing and looked over the park. From my window, I saw John walking slowly across the grass, arm in arm with Cynthia Murdoch. She looked so full of life and vigour, in contrast to John, who seemed gloomy and worn out.
Cynthia? Cynthia, where are you?
The girl rushed off back into the house. From the shadow of the trees, I noticed Lawrence looking after her, very melancholy and every inch the wistful poet. It was time for me to go down and talk to Mrs. Inglethorpe.
Such a comfort to have a real soldier in the house at last. I could hang my head in shame at the way those stepsons of mine carry on, as if the war had nothing to do with them.
Oh, but surely...
Oh, I know, I know. Lawrence is slightly lame, and John is technically too old for service, but as you well know, Captain Hastings, there are older men than John at the front, and boys more disabled than Lawrence. John goes out drilling with the Territorials once a week, but what good does that do?
And Lawrence?
He writes those miserable little poems of his, oozing with self-pity. Well, why can't he write something stirring and patriotic? Sons of mine, I hear you thrilling to the trumpet call of war.
Oh.
Well, at least Mary works with the land volunteers, gets up every morning before 5 and works till lunchtime. And there's darling Alfred, simply straining at the leash to be out there at the front, but I can't spare him. I really can't.
You need him for your bazaars and charities.
I simply do not know what I would do without that man. And he's put this house on a real war footing. Nothing is wasted at Stiles, not a scrap of food, not a single piece of paper. And we've given up late dinner, of course, as has Lady Tadminster, our member's wife. You'll have to be content with a rather Spartan supper this evening, Captain Hastings.
But for all her talk of economy, supper seemed a positive feast after so many cheerless meals at the convalescent home. That night I was kept awake by the unrelentingly beautiful song of the nightingales, and all my thoughts were of the enigmatic Mary Cavendish. But there was no sign of her in the house the following morning, and it was not until after lunch that she made an appearance.
Oh, you can't possibly waste a glorious afternoon like this sitting in the library.
So we set off on a charming walk through the woods and across the fields.
I try to get out as much as I can. It can get quite claustrophobic at times. Two married women shouldn't have to share the same house.
Mrs. Inglethorpe can't be an easy woman to live with.
Oh, don't misunderstand me, Captain Hastings. I have a great affection for Emily. But she does insist on having her own way. And she treats John and Lawrence as if they were still schoolboys. It wasn't too bad until Alfred Inglethorpe came on the scene, but now she won't listen to anyone except darling Alfred. Oh, sometimes I wish...
What do you wish?
No, don't let's talk about it any more. It's much too lovely a day. We'll cut across down to the stream. We might see a kingfisher, but we mustn't be too long. I promised John we'd be back by 5.
Thank God you're here at last. It's the very deuce of a mess. Evie's had a row with Inglethorpe and she's been given her marching orders.
But why? What actually happened?
And apparently she went to the mater and... But here she is. She can tell you herself.
Well, I've spoken my mind at any rate.
Evie, this simply can't be true.
It's true enough. I said a few things to Emily she won't forget in a hurry. There's no fool like an old fool, I told her. That man's 20 years younger than you, and don't kid yourself, he's after anything but your money. And why do you think he's spending so much time down by Long Farm? Mrs. Rakes is a very pretty woman, and he doesn't go over there just to talk about how our crops are doing.
Good Lord, and what did she say to that?
She said I was a wicked woman to tell such terrible lies about darling Alfred, and the sooner I left the house, the better. So I'm off.
But not now, surely.
This very minute. Do you think you could run me down to the station, Mr. Cavendish?
I'll go and check the times of the train.
At least wait until I've had a word with Emily, Evie. I can't believe this is happening.
Captain Hastings, You're an honest man, I can tell that. Look after my poor Emily if you can. There are a lot of sharks here, all of them. They're only waiting for her to die so they can get their hands on her money. I've protected her as much as I can, but I tremble to think what may happen when I'm gone. Just keep your eyes open, and above all, watch out for that devil, her husband.
Evie went upstairs and brought down her luggage. The Inglethorpes did not appear. As John drove her off down the drive, I noticed Mary going out to meet a tall, bearded man who was evidently heading for the house.
Who's that chap kissing Mary Cavendish's hand?
Oh, that's Dr. Bauerstein. He's staying in the village. He's a London specialist who's apparently come down here to recover from some kind of nervous breakdown.
Is that the chap Mrs. Cavendish said knew so much about poisons?
One of the greatest living experts, so they say. He's a great friend of hers.
I didn't care for the look of him very much. Too many blackbeards round Stiles, and I cared even less for his being a great friend of Mary's. When John came back from the station, we took a walk through the plantation. As we came to one of the gates, a young gypsy-looking woman, coming in the opposite direction, bowed her head and smiled.
Afternoon.
What an astonishingly pretty girl.
That is Mrs. Rakes.
The woman Evie was trying to warn your mother about.
Exactly.
Will Stiles come to you when your stepmother dies?
It should be mine now, by rights. If my father had only made a decent will, then I shouldn't be so damned hard up.
Are things really that bad?
My dear Hastings, I don't mind telling you I'm at my wit's end for money. The mater's always kept us on a pretty tight rein, and she still doles out our allowance as if it were pocket money. So humiliating. I'm a middle-aged married man, for goodness sake. And of course, since the war broke out, she can't think about anything but her bazaars and charities. Darling Alfred is at the centre of it all, of course, and he believes he can twist her round his little finger. But I'll be damned if he's going to get his hands on Stiles.
The days drifted lazily by without anything particular to mark their passing, but I began to feel that something had changed with the departure of Evelyn Howard. Her presence had spelt security. But now that security had been removed, the air seemed rife with suspicion. A vague distrust of everyone and everything filled my mind. It was quite a relief to get a letter from Evie.
I've got a job as a nurse in the hospital in Midlingham. It's only 14 miles from Stiles, and I can be over in half an hour if I'm needed. Please keep an eye on Emily, Captain Hastings, and let me know if she shows any sign of a change of heart. Sooner or later, she must see that devil for what he is, and realise what a fool he's made of her.
A spell of extraordinarily hot weather set in. Mary Cavendish went off for longer and longer expeditions with Dr. Bauerstein. What could she possibly see in the fellow? On the 16th, which was a Monday, there was a charity concert in the village hall.
We've all got to rally round. The mater wants to make a real splash with this one.
We spent all day arranging and decorating the place. Supper was served early, but we all had rather a scramble to be ready on time. And before the meal was over, the car was waiting at the door.
But, ma'am, you haven't had your medicine.
Oh, don't bother me with that now, Dorcas.
Dr. Wilkins said that on no account was you to miss taking it, ma'am. He was most insistent.
It will do me no harm to go without it for once. I've more important things to attend to.
The really important thing was a patriotic poem which Mrs. Inglethorpe delivered with considerable gusto.
Who's for the trench? Are you, my laddie? Who'll follow French? Will you, my laddie? Who's fretting to begin? Who's going to win? And who wants to save his skin? Do you, my laddie?
Of course, it was all a tremendous success. Cynthia took part in some of the tableaux and looked quite stunningly pretty.
No, I'm not coming back to Stiles tonight, Captain Hastings. I've already arranged to stay with some friends.
The following morning, Mrs. Inglethorpe kept to her room, saying she was overtired. Mary Cavendish said she was going off somewhere with Dr. Bauerstein. I felt rather at a loose end.
Why don't we pay a surprise visit to Cynthia in her dispensary? We could take the trap, since the mater won't be using it.
Well, what a lot of bottles. Do you really know what's in them all?
Oh, for goodness sake, say something original. Every single person who comes here says that. And the next thing they say is...
How many people have you poisoned? I said it the first time we met.
If you really knew how fatally easy it is to poison somebody by mistake, you wouldn't joke about it. We have to be very careful who we let loose in here.
So, where do you keep all these poisons of yours?
In the little cupboard by the window. Ah. And in the one next to it, there are all kinds of secret treats.
Ah, chocolate biscuits and the remains of a seed cake.
We can have tea out on the balcony. It's a lovely day and there's a beautiful view along the river.
I'll join you in a moment.
The view wasn't all that remarkable, but it was a warm afternoon, the sun was shining, and it was pleasant to have Cynthia to myself for a moment or two.
Where on earth has Lawrence got to? His tea will be getting cold.
Lawrence, what are you doing? Come and have your tea.
Sorry, just taking a look around. Fascinating place.
Fortunately, Lawrence went off to see a friend after tea, and Cynthia and I took the trap back to Stiles. As we drove through the village, I remembered I needed some stamps. As I was coming out of the post office, I cannoned into a little man who was just entering.
Oh, la la.
A little man with a head exactly the shape of an egg and a stiff military moustache.
Ah, mon ami Hastings! Oh. I cannot believe it! What a marvellous surprise to see you here!
Poirot! Miss Murdoch, this is my old friend Hercule Poirot. I haven't seen him for years, and here he is in style St. Mary.
Oh, we all know Monsieur Poirot, but I'd no idea he was a friend of yours.
I have met Mademoiselle Cynthia many times with the good Madame Inglethorpe.
You know Mrs. Inglethorpe?
Oh, yes, my friend. Oh. It is by her charity that I am here.
How's that?
When the Germans invaded Belgium, I joined the resistance. But I was forced to take refuge in France and then made my way to your country. I had heard that Madame Inglethorpe had given shelter to a number of my compatriots in this village, and I came here. She made me welcome and found a room for me in the house she had taken for Belgian refugees. I shall be eternally grateful to her.
Oh, you must tell me the whole story. I shall come and see you as soon as possible. It'll be just like old times.
I shall look forward to it, my friend.
Goodbye, Monsieur Poirot.
Goodbye, mademoiselle.
He's such a dear little man. How did you come to meet him?
I needed no encouragement, and all the way back I regaled her with stories of my old friend. The heat of the day still lingered at Stiles Court when we returned that evening. As we walked into the house, Mrs. Inglethorpe came out of her boudoir. She looked flushed and upset.
Are you all right, Aunt Emily? Is there something the matter?
Oh, certainly not. Why should there be? Dorcas! Oh, Dorcas.
Yes, madam.
Can you find me some stamps and bring them up to my bedroom?
Yes, ma'am. But don't you think you ought to rest? You're looking very tired.
You must not fuss, Dorcas. I need to finish my letters in time to catch the post. Have you lighted the fire in my room, as I told you to?
Yes, madam.
Good. Well, I shall go to bed directly after supper.
Yes, ma'am.
Goodness gracious. I wonder what's up.
Well, Mrs. Inglethorpe does look a bit grim, but I suppose it's none of our business. Do you think there's time for a quick game of tennis before supper?
I'm sure there is. My racket's in the conservatory. I'll go and get it.
Mine's in my room. I'll see you on the court.
Oh, good evening, Captain Hastings.
Good evening. Did you have a pleasant walk with Dr. Bowster?
I didn't go, as it happens. Do you know where Mrs. Inglethorpe is?
She's in her boudoir, I believe.
I must speak to her.
She looked as if she was nerving herself for a particularly grim encounter. As I was making my way towards the tennis court a few minutes later, I couldn't help overhearing a scrap of conversation from the open window of Mrs. Inglethorpe's boudoir.
Then you won't show it to me.
My dear Mary, it has nothing to do with that hat.
In that case, you can show it to
me. There is nothing in it that concerns you.
Of course, I might have known you would shield him.
Fascinating though it all was, I could hardly stand and listen to a private conversation, and Cynthia was waiting for me on the tennis court.
I say, there's been the most frightful row. I got it all out of Dorcas.
What kind of row?
Between Aunt Emily and Inglethorpe.
What about?
Well, she's obviously found him out at last, and she was making it very clear that she wasn't going to let him get away with it.
Get away with what?
Dorcas doesn't know exactly. She just happened to be near the door. I'm praying that Aunt Emily will give him his marching orders and never speak to him again.
Supper was a distinctly chilly affair. John sat there in stony silence. Mary appeared nervous and agitated. Lawrence gazed abstractedly into space. And Inglethorpe, who as a rule fussed over his wife with little attentions, sat there staring gloomily down into his big black beard.
Mary, will you send my coffee into the boudoir? I've just got 5 minutes to catch the post.
Cynthia and I went and sat by the open window in the drawing room.
Do you young people want the lamps on, or do you prefer to sit here in the twilight?
Oh, I'd much rather watch it growing dark.
Will you take Emily her coffee, Cynthia? I'll pour it.
Do not trouble yourself, Mary. I'll pour it.
As you wish, Mr. Inglethorpe. Oh, it's almost too hot. We shall have a thunderstorm.
Who on earth can that be at this time of night?
Of course it had to be Dr. Bauerstein, who spun some cock-and-bull story about falling into a pond while trying to get at a rare species of fern. His trousers were thick with mud, and he looked completely ludicrous. But Mary seemed quite unperturbed, and John was remarkably affable.
You must sit down and have a coffee and tell us all about it.
Cynthia!
Yes, Aunt Emily?
Carry my dispatch case up for me, will you? I'm going to bed.
Yes, Aunt Emily? Have you finished your coffee?
No, I haven't touched it yet. I'll take it up with me. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
The evening had been completely spoiled by the wretched Bauerstein. It seemed as if he would never go. But eventually he rose and prepared to take his leave.
I'll walk down to the village with you, Doctor. I must have a word with our agent about the estate accounts before I go to bed. There's no need for anyone to wait up, John. I take the latchkey with me.
As he went out, there was a clap of thunder, and he looked more than ever like the Demon King in a pantomime. But as the summer storm drew nearer, I felt a strange premonition of evil, of some fate that was to break in on us and change Stiles Court forever.
What is it? What's the matter? No, come in, for goodness sake. Lawrence, what is it?
It's Mother. She seems to be having some kind of fit, but she's locked herself in her room.
I sprang out of bed at once and followed Lawrence along the gallery to the right wing of the house. The servants were standing around in a state of awe-stricken excitement.
Oh, Hastings, what should we do? Oh, the door's either locked or bolted.
Oh, poor mistress. Why don't you try going through Mr. Inglethorpe's room, sir?
Of course, Dorcas. Why didn't I think of that?
Where is Inglethorpe, anyway?
Oh, God only knows. Let's hope his door's not locked.
His bed's not been slept in. Where the devil has he got to?
Oh, the connecting door's locked on the other side.
Help. She must be in agony.
Isn't there a connecting door to Cynthia's room?
It's always kept locked, sir.
Well, it's still worth trying. Come on.
Mary?
Cynthia's sound asleep. I've been trying to wake her for ages. It's no good trying the connecting door, Lawrence. It's locked.
She was dressed ready for work in her land volunteer's smock. I realised that it must be 5 o'clock, much later than I had thought.
There's nothing for it. We'll have to break in. The door from Inglethorpe's room is probably our best bet.
Dorcas, go and tell Bailey to get the trap and fetch Dr. Wilkins at once.
Yes, Mr. Lawrence.
The door looks pretty solid to me, but the two of us ought to be able to manage it. Again. And again.
She's having convulsions of some sort. Annie, go down to the dining room and get the brandy.
Yes, sir.
I'll unbolt the door to the corridor. Best not have too many people standing around for Lawrence. I'll go back to my... What's the matter, man?
Nothing. It's just...
His face was as white as chalk. The candle he held in his shaking hand was spluttering on the carpet. His eyes, petrified with terror, stared fixedly beyond me to some point on the wall.
Cynthia's all right now. It's all been a bit of a shock for her.
She's in such a deep sleep, I couldn't come out of it. Poor Aunt Emily.
Sorry, it caused so much fuss. Stupid of me. Lock myself in.
Don't try to talk. Dr. Wilkins will be here soon. Just try to...
What on earth's the matter with her?
Let me smoke. I don't see it.
Alfred! Alfred!
Stand back from the bed, if you please.
But his expression gave us little cause for hope. I think we all knew in our hearts that there was nothing Dr. Bauerstein could do to help her.
I came too late. I am sorry.
But how did you come to be here?
I happened to be passing by the lodge gate when I met Bailey on his way to get the doctor from the village. Why did you not send for him earlier?
Mother was locked in her room. We didn't know what was the matter.
Please, sir. Dr. Wilkins is here.
Then bring him in here at once. And if the rest of you have no objection, I would like you to leave Dr. Wilkins and myself alone in here for a short while.
Of course.
Why is Dr. Bauerstein behaving so strangely, do you think?
I have a suspicion.
Yes?
He thinks Mrs. Inglethorpe may have been poisoned.
Poison? But that's impossible. It can't be true. Leave me alone for a minute or two, will you, Captain Hastings? Go down and join the others.
Where on earth is Inglethorpe? Has anyone seen him?
Well, he went down to the village last night to have a word with the land agent. I suppose he must have stayed there.
Oh, it's quite light already. What time is it?
Nearly 6 o'clock.
Mr. Cavendish, may I have a word?
Yes, Dr. Bauerstein.
Dr. Wilkins and I have examined the body, and we would like you to give your consent to a post-mortem.
Is that really necessary?
I'm afraid that neither Dr. Wilkins nor I could give a death certificate under the present circumstances.
Well, then you leave me no alternative but to agree.
I think it would be best if the post-mortem were to take place later today. I have locked both Mrs. Inglethorpe's room and that of her husband. Here are the keys.
All my detective instincts were aroused. I hurried down to the library to consult Lawrence's old medical textbooks.
Ah, so that's where you've got to.
I'm sorry to have let you in for this terrible business, Hastings. It's hardly the kind of rescuer I had in mind.
Oh, don't you worry yourself about that. There's something I want to ask you.
Yeah.
You remember my speaking of my old friend, Hercule Poirot?
Mm.
He's staying at the Belgian house in the village. He used to be a famous detective.
Well?
I want you to let me call him in.
What, now? Before the post-mortem?
The sooner the better, if there's been any foul play.
You surely can't believe that. It's just a wild notion of Bauerstein's. Poisons are his speciality. He sees them everywhere.
I only wish I could believe that, Lawrence, but I can't. You're sure there won't be any unnecessary scandal?
Poirot is discretion itself.
Then I leave it all in your hands. So if there has been foul play, there's not much doubt who's responsible.
I'll go straight away. I'll cut across the park.
Captain Hastings! I've only just heard about my poor Emily. Is it really true?
I'm afraid it is, Mr. Inglethorpe. But where have you been all this time? Everyone's looking for you.
I was going over the accounts late last night with the agent, Denby. And when I came to leave, I found I had forgotten to take the latchkey. I did not wish to wake the household, so I spent the night there.
So how did you hear the news?
Wilkins knocked up Denby to tell him. But I must not stay here talking. Poor Emily... She must have overtaxed her strength.
Fortunately, he did not ask me where I was going, and in a few minutes I was sitting in Poirot's room at Leastways Cottage, telling him the whole story.
Now, one little moment, my friend. What makes you think this is a case of strychnine poisoning? Did Dr. Bauerstein say so?
No, I looked up the symptoms in a medical textbook of Lawrence's.
Good. Pray continue.
All the time I was speaking, he was making a careful and elaborate toilet. I fear I was not always as clear as I could have wished.
The mind is confused, is it not? You are agitated, you are excited. To that I attribute the circumstance that you have omitted one most important fact.
Oh, what's that?
You have not told me whether Mrs. Inglethorpe ate well last night.
I don't see why it's that important. As far as I can remember, she didn't eat very much at all. She was obviously upset and had lost her appetite. It was very natural.
Yes, as you say, it was natural. Ah, and now I am ready. Un moment, mon ami. Hmm? You're dressed in haste, and your tie is crooked. Allow me.
But you still haven't told me why it's so important to know whether Mrs. Inglethorpe ate well or not.
It is not my habit to explain such things until the end is reached. But in this case, I will make an exception. In looking through your friend's textbook, you probably did not observe that the effects of strychnine poisoning usually show themselves in about 1 hour. But with Mrs. Inglethorpe, they appear to have taken nearly 9 hours. A heavy meal might have retarded the effect. However, since you say that she ate very little, we are faced with a most curious circumstance.
Has Hastings explained to you, Monsieur Poirot, that we are most anxious to avoid any publicity?
I comprehend perfectly.
Good, then I'm at your service.
May I have the keys to the room in which your mother died?
Of course. Consider yourself free to go wherever you wish.
Once inside the room, Poirot relocked the door and put his attaché case down on a little round table, which promptly collapsed.
Oh, la la.
He darted about with the agility of a grasshopper. tried the bolts on both doors, found something which he scraped into a tiny envelope. On the chest of drawers was a tray with a spirit lamp and a small saucepan on it, containing some dark fluid, with an empty cup and saucer nearby.
Cocoa with, yes, I think a little rum in it. And observe, on the floor, a smashed coffee cup.
Obviously someone trod on it.
Rather more than that, I think.
He went over to the mantelpiece, where he stood straightening the spill holders and ornaments, a trick of his when he was agitated.
That cup has been deliberately ground underfoot, almost to powder, either because it contains strychnine or, which is far more serious, because it did not contain strychnine.
He continued his examination for the best part of half an hour, and then he took out a little notebook.
We have found in this room 6 points of interest. Shall I enumerate them?
Please, go ahead.
1. The coffee cup. 2. A purple dispatch box containing papers which must be examined as quickly as possible, but which at present I have no authority to look at. 3. A stain on the carpet.
That may date from some time ago.
No. It is still perceptibly damp and smells of coffee. 4. A thread of some dark green fabric caught on the bolt of the door to Mademoiselle Cynthia's room.
You think that may be relevant?
At this stage, mon ami, everything is relevant. 5. This large splash of candle grease on the floor by the writing table.
That was probably Lawrence. He was carrying the only candle and he was very agitated. He kept on staring at something over on that wall.
Ah, that is very suggestive. But it was not his candle that did it. This is white grease. His candle, which is still on the dressing table, is pink.
So how do you account for it?
Oh, you must use your own natural faculties, mon ami.
And I suppose your 6th point is the cocoa.
No, the 6th point I shall keep to myself for the moment.
So, does this conclude your examination?
I think so. Unless there is something in the ashes of the fireplace. Oh, mon Dieu, there is. The forceps, Hastings. There. What do you make of that?
A tiny scrap of charred paper with the remains of someone's handwriting. Not much to go on.
Look more closely, my friend.
It might be a double L followed by an and.
And what does that suggest to you?
But, well, nothing much.
No. Think of words ending in double L, my friend.
Call. Pull. Pill? Will.
Ah, exactly. Will.
Will and testament. It's the fragment of a burnt will.
I had rather expected to find something of the sort. And now, Hastings, we will go. I would like to have a little word with the housekeeper. Dorcas, is it not?
I took him down to the boudoir and went off to fetch Dorcas. When I returned, he had opened the French windows and was gazing down at the beds of begonias.
Ah, admirable! What symmetry! The neatness of the work of the gardeners rejoices the eye.
Dorcas is here.
Oh, no, do not begrudge me a moment's satisfaction, mon ami.
But surely it's more important that you speak to Dorcas.
But how do you know that these flower beds are not of equal importance? But let us talk with the good lady.
I just can't get over it, sir. She was a very good mistress to me.
Then I hope you will not object to answering a few questions. I put them to you with the full approval of Mr. Cavendish.
Yes, sir.
Let us begin with the events of yesterday afternoon. I understand that you heard your mistress having some sort of quarrel.
I just happened to be passing through the hall when I heard angry voices coming from this room.
And what time was this, mademoiselle?
It's about 4 o'clock, I think. You must understand that I didn't intend to listen, sir.
Oh, I do understand, Dorcas. Pray continue.
The door was shut, but the mistress was speaking very loud and clear. "You've lied to me and deceived me," she said. I didn't hear what Mr. Inglethorpe said in reply. He spoke a good deal lower than she did. But then she said, "Nothing you can say will make any difference. I see my duty clearly. You need not think that fear of publicity of scandal between husband and wife will deter me. And then I thought they were coming out, so I went off quickly.
Now, you are sure it was Mr. Inglethorpe's voice you heard?
Oh, yes, sir. Whose else could it be?
So, what happened next?
Well, it was 5 o'clock. Mrs. Inglethorpe rang the bell and asked me to bring her a cup of tea to the boudoir. She was looking dreadful. Dorcas, she says to me, I've had a great shock. Oh, I'm sorry to hear that, ma'am, I says. You'll feel better after a nice cup of tea. She had something in her hand. I don't know if it was a letter or just a piece of paper, but it had writing on it, and she kept staring at it, almost as if she couldn't believe what was written there. She whispered to herself, as if she'd forgotten I was in the room. These few words, she says, and everything's changed. And then she says, never trust a man, Dorcas. They're not worth it.
So what did you do then?
Well, I hurried off and got her a good, strong cup of tea, and she thanked me. And then she says, I don't know what to do. Scandal between husband and wife is a dreadful thing, Dorcas. I'd rather hush it up if I could. But Mrs. Cavendish came in just then, so she didn't say any more.
And what became of the letter, or whatever it was?
Well, I don't know, sir. She probably locked it up in that purple case of hers.
Is that where she normally kept important papers?
Yes, sir. She brought it down with her every morning and took it up every night.
Now tell me, did your mistress possess a green dress?
Oh, no, sir. She couldn't abide green.
Does anyone else in the house have a green dress?
Miss Cynthia has a green chiffon evening gown.
Oh, no, chiffon is not what I want. Let us pass on. Do you know whether your mistress had a sleeping powder last night?
Not last night, sir. The box was empty. She took the last one 2 days ago, and she didn't have any more made up.
Now, I understand that your mistress was busy writing letters yesterday evening. Can you give me any idea to whom they were addressed?
Well, I'm afraid I can't, sir. I was out in the evening. And as a result, Annie never cleared away the coffee cups after dinner. That's what happens when I'm not here to look after things.
Well, since they have been left, Dorcas, leave them a little longer. They might have something to tell us. Well, I have nothing more to ask. Thank you, Dorcas. Now, will you please send Annie here?
Yes, sir. Thank you, sir.
How did you know Mrs. Inglethorpe took sleeping powders?
I found an empty box in the washstand drawer in her bedroom. Oh. That was my sixth point of interest. And what was very curious was that there was no chemist's name on the label.
That's certainly very odd.
There may be a perfectly simple explanation. But here is Annie. Come in, mademoiselle, and please sit down.
Thank you, sir.
Now, I want to ask you about the letters Mrs. Inglethorpe wrote last night. Can you remember any of the names and addresses?
There was one to a lawyer, Mr. Wells. I remember that. And there was one to Ross's, the caterers in Tadminster. And... that's all I can remember.
You're sure?
Well, there was another. It slipped my memory.
Well, it will come back to you. Now, I want to ask you about the little saucepan in Mrs. Inglethorpe's room.
The one for the cocoa, sir?
Yes. Tell me, how did she take her cocoa?
Oh, with milk and 1 teaspoonful of sugar and 2 teaspoonfuls of rum.
And who took it to her room?
I did, sir.
And did you bring the saucepan straight up from the kitchen?
No, sir. There's not much room on the gas stove while dinner's cooking, so cook used to make the cocoa early. I put it on the table by the swing door and took it up to the mistress later.
So how long was the cocoa left standing on the table?
From about 7:15 until 8 when I took it up to her. And there was no salt in it, so it wasn't me.
What makes you think there was salt in it, Annie?
There was some on the tray, sir.
You noticed some salt on the tray?
Yes, sir. Common kitchen salt, it looked like. I couldn't see any in the cocoa, so I dusted the salt off with my apron and took the tray up. I hope I did right, sir.
But this explains everything. It was the cocoa and not the coffee that was poisoned.
Do you think that the cocoa contains strychnine?
Of course. The salt on the tray, what else could it have been?
It might have been salt.
Oh, for goodness sake, Poirot.
Ah, you are not pleased with me, mon ami.
My dear Poirot, it's not for me to dictate to you. You have a right to your opinion, as I have a right to mine.
Good. So, let us examine the coffee cups.
What on earth's the good of that now we know about the cocoa?
Come, come, my friend. Ne vous fâchez pas. Allow me to interest myself in the coffee cups, and I will respect your cocoa. Is it a bargain?
He was so quaintly humorous that I was forced to laugh. And so we went into the drawing room, where the coffee cups had been left from the previous evening.
So Mrs. Cavendish stood by the tray and poured out. Then she came across to the window where you were sitting with Mademoiselle Cynthia. Yes, here are the cups. And the cup on the mantelpiece, half drunk. That would be the cup of Mr. Lawrence. And the one on the tray?
John Cavendish's. I saw him put it down there.
But where is the cup of Mr. Inglethorpe?
He doesn't take coffee.
Ah, good. Then all are accounted for.
With infinite care, he took a specimen from the grounds of each cup, sealing them in separate little test tubes, tasting each in turn. There was a strange expression on his face, half puzzlement and half relief.
I trust I'm not disturbing you, Monsieur Poirot, but breakfast is ready. Will you join us?
It would be a pleasure.
Can you tell me whether you think my mother died a natural death, or must we prepare ourselves for the worst?
I think you would do well not to deceive yourself with any false hopes. What are the views of the other members of your family?
My brother Lawrence is convinced we're all making a fuss about nothing.
And Mrs. Cavendish?
I haven't the least idea of my wife's views on the subject. But what the devil are we going to do about Inglethorpe? One's gorge rather rises at sitting down to eat with a man who's probably a murderer.
At breakfast there were no red eyes, no signs of secretly indulged grief. Inglethorpe acted the bereaved widower. Mary Cavendish was as enigmatic as a sphinx. Cynthia Murdoch appeared tired and ill, and greatly disconcerted Poirot when she told him she did not take sugar in her coffee.
Excuse me, Mr. Cavendish, but Mr. Wells is here to see you.
You'll show him into my study, will you, Dorcas?
Yes, sir.
Mr. Wells is my mother's lawyer. Perhaps you'd like to come with me, Monsieur Poirot, and you too, of course, Hastings.
This is a most unhappy business, Mr. Cavendish.
I'm sure you understand, Wells, that this must all be kept strictly private. We're still hoping there will turn out to be no need for an investigation of any kind.
I should be failing in my duty if I were to encourage you in that hope. There is no chance of sparing you the pain and publicity of an inquest. It's quite unavoidable in the absence of a doctor's certificate.
I suppose it is. When will it be?
Well, if you've no objection, I thought of Friday. That'll give us plenty of time after today's post-mortem. Well, will that arrangement suit you?
Oh, yes. The sooner we get it over with, the better.
I need not tell you how distressed I am by the whole tragic affair.
Could you perhaps give us some help in solving the mystery, Mr. Wells?
I would be only too delighted to do so if it's in my power.
Apparently, Mrs. Inglethorpe wrote a letter to you last night. You should have received it this morning.
I did, but it was merely a note asking me to call on her today, as she wanted my advice on a matter of great importance. But she gave no hint as to what the matter might be.
That is a pity.
Mr. Wells, if it is not against professional etiquette, can you tell us who inherits Mrs. Inglethorpe's fortune in the event of her death?
If Mr. Cavendish does not object.
Not at all. Go ahead.
By her last will, dated April of last year, she left her entire fortune to her stepson, Mr. John Cavendish. It's possible, of course, that somewhere there may be a later will.
There is a later will, Mr. Wells.
Or rather, there was.
What do you mean? Where is it now?
This charred fragment is all that remains of it. Hastings and I found it in the grate of Mrs. Inglethorpe's bedroom earlier this morning.
But when did she make it?
Sometime yesterday afternoon, I believe. You can ask the gardeners who were working just outside the window. She must have called them in to witness it. There was mud on the step of the French window.
So that was why you were so interested in the begonias.
But it is an extraordinary coincidence she should make a new will on the day of her death.
Not that extraordinary, surely.
What do you mean by that?
But you told me that your stepmother had a violent quarrel with somebody yesterday afternoon. And in consequence, she might well have made another will.
Good Lord.
What's all that noise?
It's Evelyn Howard. She's come back.
Well, in that case, since I'm sure you'll want to speak to her, let's take a short break. I need to examine some of the papers in your mother's room.
Thank you, Wells. Perhaps you would care to come with me, Monsieur Poirot?
I'd just come off duty when I heard the news. Hired a car. Quickest way to get here.
I'll get Dorcas to find you some breakfast. Evie, this is Monsieur Poirot. He's helping us.
Helping you do what?
Investigate my mother's death.
Nothing to investigate. Why isn't Inglethorpe in prison?
I can hardly drag him down to the police station by the scruff of the neck.
Well, find out how he did it. Dare say he soaked fly papers. Ask Cook if she's missed any.
I'll make a point of it.
Mademoiselle, may I ask a favour of you?
Ask away.
I want to be able to count on your help.
I'll help you to hang Alfred Inglethorpe with pleasure.
Oh, believe me, if Mr. Inglethorpe is the man, I will hang him as high as Haman. But I must ask you to trust me. Your help will be invaluable, and I will tell you why. Because in all this house, yours are the only eyes that have wept.
I watched over her, you see. I guarded her from the rest of them. And then this scoundrel came along, and all my years of devotion went for nothing.
Will you come up to my stepmother's room, Monsieur Poirot? Dorcas says Mr. Wells is ready to go through the papers in her dispatch case, and I believe you still have the keys.
If you will permit me, Mr. Wells, I locked it earlier this morning as a precaution.
That's very odd.
What is odd, Mr. Wells?
The case is unlocked.
Impossible.
Well, see for yourself.
Oh, the lock has evidently been forced.
But the door was locked.
I'm afraid that most of the keys to the rooms in this corridor would have fitted it.
Fool that I am, I should never have left the case out of my hands.
He walked over to the mantelpiece. His hands were trembling violently as they mechanically straightened the vases of paper spills.
There was something in that case which linked the murderer to the crime. It was obviously vital that it should be destroyed. But it was a great risk for the murderer to take.
What do you think it could have been?
A document of some kind. Perhaps the paper that Dorcas saw in Mrs. Inglethorpe's hand. And now, imbecile that I am, I have allowed it to be snatched away. The good lady was very generous to us Belgians, and I am greatly in debt to her. And now, through my thoughtlessness, her murderer may never be brought to justice.
Extraordinary little friend, Captain Hastings. He's just rushed past me like a mad bull.
He's rather upset about something. Tell me, have Mr. Inglethorpe and Miss Howard run into one another since she came back?
John's been trying to keep them apart, I think.
I can't imagine Inglethorpe's very keen to see her again.
Do you think it would be such a disaster if they did meet?
Well, don't you?
No. I should like to see a really good flare-up. It would clear the air. At present, we're all thinking too much and saying too little. Oh, but here comes your friend. I shall leave him to you. Au revoir, Monsieur Poirot.
Au revoir, madame. Well, at least I have alerted everyone, Hastings. The servants will know now what to look for.
But is this wise, Poirot? Surely you don't want the whole house to know that someone has broken into Mrs. Inglethorpe's dispatch case? Aren't you playing into the murderer's hands?
You think so, Hastings?
I'm sure of it.
Oh, very well, my friend. I will be guided by you.
Unfortunately, it's rather too late now.
You may be right.
Are you leaving so soon, Monsieur Poirot?
Yes, mademoiselle. I am going back to my cottage to put my little grey cells to work on the problem.
What a funny way to put it.
But there is something I would like to ask you, Mademoiselle Cynthia.
Yes? What is it?
In the drawer of the washstand in Mrs. Inglethorpe's room, I discovered an empty box which had contained sleeping powders.
Yes?
Did you make them up for her, mademoiselle?
Yes, I did.
Can you tell me what they were? Sulfonyl? Veronyl?
No, they were bromide powders.
Thank you. I was curious, voyez-vous, because of the label on the box being blank.
I'm sure they were perfectly harmless.
I never doubted it. Come, Hastings. Au revoir, mademoiselle.
There can't really be very much doubt as to the identity of the murderer.
You think not?
It can only be Inglethorpe. It stands to reason.
And yet, my friend, there are certain points in his favour.
I can only think of one.
And what is that?
That he was not in the house last night.
On the contrary, you have chosen the one point that counts against him.
How's that?
If Mr. Inglethorpe knew that his wife would be poisoned, he would certainly have arranged to be away from the house.
So, if the coroner's jury returns a verdict of willful murder against Alfred Inglethorpe...
I should not allow it.
You would not allow it?
No, Hastings, I would not.
I say, Mr. Poirot...
Yes, what is it?
You remember me, Mr. Mace from the chemist's shop.
Of course, Mr. Mace.
Have you just come from the hall?
Yes, we have.
And is it true what they're saying, that Mrs. Inglethorpe has been poisoned?
That is for the doctors to decide.
It wasn't strychnine, was it?
If you have any information on that point, Mr. Mace, I think you should report it to the coroner.
In the days preceding the inquest, I saw remarkably little of Poirot. He spent most of his time taking long walks around the countryside, very uncharacteristic for a man who took such obsessive pride in the polish of his shoes.
You're in from the Hall, aren't you?
Yes, I'm looking for a friend of mine, as a matter of fact.
That Belgian bloke?
Yes, that's the one.
Well, he's been here, all right. The gentlemen from the Hall don't seem to be able to keep themselves away from Rake's Farm.
Why? Do other gentlemen come this way, then?
One does. And more than one. Not that I'm naming any names, mind.
Is it possible that Mrs. Inglethorpe could have swallowed the poison by accident?
The inquest was heard in the Stylites' Arms. Poirot and I sat together listening to the evidence of the toxicology expert witness, Mary's friend, Dr. Bauerstein.
I would consider it most unlikely. Strychnine is not used for domestic purposes, and there are restrictions placed on its sale.
Then could it have been administered in Mrs. Inglethorpe's after-dinner coffee?
It is possible, but strychnine is a fairly rapid drug in its action. The fact that the symptoms did not manifest themselves until nearly 4 o'clock in the morning would seem to point to the coffee having been drunk long after Mrs. Inglethorpe took it up with her.
I understand she was in the habit of drinking a cup of cocoa in the middle of the night. Could the strychnine have been administered in that?
Ah, now we're coming to it.
Cocoa could never conceal the bitter taste of strychnine. But to make certain, I took a sample of the cocoa remaining in the saucepan, and the analysis showed no trace of the poison.
What did I tell you, mon ami?
Thank you, Dr. Bauerstein.
And then Lawrence Cavendish was called. He came up with a quite extraordinary suggestion.
Of course, I may be wrong, but it still seems to me that my stepmother's death might be accounted for by natural means.
And how do you make that out, Mr. Cavendish?
At the time of her death, and for some time before it, she was taking a tonic which contained strychnine. I believe there have been cases where the cumulative effect of the drug administered for some time has ended by causing death.
Why, I wondered, was Lawrence so anxious to prove his stepmother's death was an accident? But Bauerstein made short work of his theory.
What Mr. Cavendish suggests is utterly impossible. Any doctor would tell you that. The whole thing is absurd.
And then Mary Cavendish was called. She looked pale, but very self-assured.
I was woken by my alarm clock at 4:45, as usual, and as I was getting dressed, I heard something being knocked over.
Would that have been the table in Mrs. Inglethorpe's bedroom?
I believe so. I opened the door, and Dorcas came running down the corridor to wake my husband.
I really do not think we need trouble you further on this aspect, Mrs. Cavendish, since we know all we need to know what happened next. But I should be obliged if you could tell us what you overheard of a particular quarrel on the day before.
Quarrel?
Yes, Mrs. Cavendish. I understand from the deposition of the maid, Annie, that you were sitting on the bench just outside the long window of the boudoir.
That is so.
And the boudoir window was open, was it not?
Yes.
Then you cannot fail to hear the voices inside, since they were raised in anger. Will you repeat to us what you overheard of the quarrel?
I really do not remember hearing anything very much. I'm not in the habit of listening to private conversations.
Even so, you must have caught some word or phrase that made you realise It was a private conversation.
I remember Mrs. Inglethorpe saying something about causing a scandal between husband and wife.
Which corresponds to what I understand Dorcas heard. But although you realised it was a private conversation, you did not go away.
I caught the momentary gleam of her tawny eyes. I felt certain that she would willingly have torn him into little pieces, but she replied quietly enough.
I was very comfortable where I was. I fixed my mind on my book.
The coroner did not seem very satisfied with her reply, but he let it go at that. But then came the real sensation of the day, the evidence of Mr. Mace, the chemist.
Tell me, have you lately sold strychnine to any unauthorised person?
Yes, sir.
And when was this?
On Monday the 16th.
The day before Mrs. Inglethorpe's death. And will you tell us to whom you sold it?
To Mr. Inglethorpe.
Quiet, please. Quiet, please. Are you quite sure of that?
Quite sure.
Are you in the habit of selling strychnine indiscriminately over the counter?
No, sir. But seeing as it was Mr. Inglethorpe at the Hall, I thought there was no harm in it. He said it was to poison a dog.
Is it not customary for anyone purchasing poison to sign the book?
Yes, sir. Mr. Inglethorpe did so. I have the book here.
Mr. Inglethorpe, on Monday evening last, did you purchase strychnine for the purpose of poisoning a dog?
No, I did not. There is no dog at Stiles except for a sheepdog, which is in perfect health.
Do you deny that this is your signature in the chemist's poison book?
This is not my handwriting. It is not even remotely like my signature. Let me show you. There. Do you see? It is totally different.
Then what is your explanation for Mr. Macy's statement?
Mr. Mace must have been mistaken.
Mr. Inglethorpe, would you mind telling us where you were on the evening of Monday, July the 16th?
I cannot remember. I have an idea. I was out walking.
In which direction?
I cannot remember.
Did you meet anyone on your walk?
No.
Am I to take it that you declined to say where you were when Mr. Mace positively recognised you entering the chemist's shop?
If you like to take it that way, yes.
Does this imbecile want to be arrested?
I believe you had a discussion with your wife on Tuesday afternoon.
You have been misinformed. The whole story of the quarrel is absolutely untrue. I was absent from the house all afternoon.
Have you anyone who can testify to that?
You have my word.
There are two witnesses who will swear to having heard your disagreement with Mrs. Inglethorpe.
Those witnesses were mistaken.
Mrs. Inglethorpe, when your wife was on the point of death, she cried out, "Alfred! Alfred!" Why should she do that?
The room was dimly lit. My wife caught sight of Dr. Bauerstein. He wears a beard and is much of my height and build. She obviously mistook him for me and cried out to him.
But it is an idea, that.
I believe, Miss Inglethorpe, that it was you who poured out the coffee that evening and took the cup to your wife?
I poured it out, yes, but I did not take it to her. I was told that Dr. Bauerstein had arrived, and I put the coffee cup on the table in the hall while I went to talk to him. When I came back, the cup was gone.
Thank you, Mr. Inglethorpe.
Do you see that man sitting near the door?
The sharp, ferret-faced chap?
Yes. That is Detective Inspector Chap. Huh? He and his companion are both from Scotland Yard. Things are moving quickly, my friend.
And then came the verdict, though it was almost a foregone conclusion.
Willful murder against some person or persons unknown.
Nonsense! We all know who the murderer is, and he's standing there!
Well, if it isn't Monsieur Poirot. There's no mistaking you, is there?
This is my colleague, Inspector Summerhayes.
And this is my good friend, Captain Hastings.
Pleased to meet you, Captain.
How do you do?
How do you do, sir?
You must have heard me speak of Monsieur Poirot Summerhayes. We've worked together on the Abercrombie forgery case, and our friend here ran him to earth in Brussels. Long before the war, that was. And do you remember the so-called Baron Altera? He thumbed his nose at half the police in Europe, but thanks to Monsieur Poirot, we nailed him in Antwerp.
I am sure there is no need to ask why you are here, gentlemen.
No, there's not. Pretty clear case, I should say.
There I differ from you.
Oh, come off it, monsieur. The whole thing's as clear as daylight.
Hold your horses, Summerhayes. If I'm not mistaken, you've got something up your sleeve, haven't you, Monsieur Poirot?
Well, let us say I am very anxious that Alfred Inglethorpe should not be arrested.
But it's as plain as the nose on your face.
If you do arrest him, the case will be dismissed at once.
Well, Monsieur Poirot, I'm prepared to take your word for it, but my superiors won't. Can't you give me a bit more to go on?
It can be done. I would have preferred to work in the dark for a little longer, but I can see that the word of a Belgian policeman whose day is past is not enough. Are you going at once to Stiles Court?
Just as soon as we've had a word with the coroner.
Then call for me at the cottage as soon as you have finished. We will go together.
But I still don't understand. If Inglethorpe is innocent, how do you account for him buying the strychnine?
Very simply. He did not buy it.
But Mace recognized
him. No. Mace saw a man with a black beard like Inglethorpe's and glasses like Inglethorpe's. He did not really know him. Why should he doubt that the man was not the genuine article?
But if that's the case, why did he not say where he was at 6 o'clock on Monday?
Can you not guess?
No. Can you?
Oh, yes. I have a little idea. Ah, but there is Sharp. Let us go to Siles and hear what Alfred Inglethorpe has to say for himself when he is not taking the stand in court.